Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Lisa, who has agreed to be with us tonight to talk about the What You Practice retreat. What you practice is what you have, which she attended last year because we have just gone live with most of our 2012 schedule, and there are two of those retreats on the schedule, one in April and one in June. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi. Hi, Jen.
Thanks for being with us.
Sure.
So maybe you could tell us about, you've obviously been on many, many retreats, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about this particular retreat, although it's tricky to talk about, isn't it, because there are so many things about it that we can't give away.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to be spontaneous, but at the same time, I did kind of practice in my head how to say things without giving away the secrets or giving away the surprises. So
yeah.
I'm going to try very hard.
Okay,
so if I veer off into dangerous territory, you know, feel free to cut me off, right? Cut me off.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I have been through quite a few retreats, and I would say that this one, I've loved them all, and they all have come at the right time in my practice, I think, you know, and maybe that's just how it goes, you know, the first one and then the next one and the next one just seem to be right on time and transformative, everyone. This one, I will say, though, I don't know, it was super transformative. I don't know how else to put it. It definitely came at the right time in my practice and my life, but then also I think it's really extraordinary. I was blown away by the whole experience, and I think other than the "there's nothing wrong with you," this one completely also just shifted my whole way of being in the world and my relationship with myself and my relationship with conditioning and suffering and yeah, I mean, I think that that the experience definitely changed me in a way that stuck, also in a way that that's pretty. It impresses me every day that I'm still using every day many tools from that we learned from this retreat.
Yeah, I really like the way you put that it shifted your relationship with your entire life and with yourself. And then in particular, you know, as you say, every retreat comes at the right time and gives us so much, but something in particular about the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat and then the What You Practice retreat have that really sort of foundational shift feel to them, don't they?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, definitely, you know, There's Nothing Wrong With You changed how I see my life and who I am. And then this one, it's kind of like it built on that, is all I can say. You know, I mean, obviously, There's Nothing Wrong With You opens up a whole new world, at least it did for me.
Yeah.
And then this retreat was so, it's so funny because I was thinking about it. It's so practical, because it's just so useful. Like, it really does, I walked away with a whole set of tools that I can use to, you know, love myself, live my life from the authentic part of myself, to fight off, literally, sometimes, you know, the voices of suffering that just want to come in and take over that life, you know. So there's this possibility of this beautiful, creative, innocent, just you know, authentic life. And then, you know, there's all that stuff, that conditioning that comes in. And this retreat really gave me practical tools to use when all of those things kick up and I can feel the things starting to try to be torn away from me. Like, I know what to do. Like, I know exactly what to do. Like, and if I don't know what to do, I can certainly tap into something that within a few seconds then I will know what to do. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And, you know, it's perfect that it's the sequel, that What You Practice Is What You Have is the sequel to There Is Nothing Wrong With You, because the way you're laying it out, it's like the work of There Is Nothing Wrong With You really opens the door, often for a lot of people, for the very first time. They see the possibility of living a life beyond self-hate, of living from who they authentically are. But opening that door is one thing, living from it is something completely different.
Yeah, it's so true, because for me, it just made me think of it as there's nothing wrong with you. It's like, that's when I found out I wasn't self-hate. The self-hate wasn't who I am. And that was like, you know, I don't know, that could have been it. I mean, that was amazing to know that that's not who I am.
Yeah.
And then kind of this retreat I felt was like that, and so, you know, so now what are you going to do, you know? and then I felt like this retreat gave me things that it would take care of me. You know, like it was how I was going to use that information. And also, you know, I practiced, I'm not going to give anything away. But one thing that I thought about it all day, was there's something that's different about this retreat, that it connected with a part of myself. It almost feels like that part, I hope I don't say this wrong, but it feels like that part isn't touched by conditioning. Like it's almost like being a beginner. Like this retreat, I connected with I was almost a young part of myself, or a childlike part of myself, or just like a wondrous kind of curious part of myself.
Yeah.
That it was so brilliant because it went right to that part, and none of the other stuff could work. None of the other conditioning could get in the way and muck it up, because we weren't on that level.
Yeah.
There was this whole other level that we were working on, and it's brilliant, because of course that person wants to live an authentic life and live in joy and bliss and happiness and love. And that's exactly what this retreat was appealing to, working with and going for. And I mean, it's so amazing to me that, you know, to sidestep all of that, and then get into the heart of things. Not only was it, you know, powerful, but it's just, of course, that's how you would have to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I really do. And I have goosebumps as you're talking, because I don't think I would have been able to articulate what you said, but it's exactly my experience that the retreat really does go. It bypasses everything that conditioning wants to do to take practice over. Think about it, figure it out, you know, whatever it does to try to, there, the person sees the possibility when they first come to practice, and they practice and they practice and they practice. And for just about everyone, I would imagine, in some way conditioning attempts to take that over. And this retreat really, it really does. It sidesteps conditioning. Conditioning takes a huge hit because of the brilliance of the way that the retreat is put together. It goes straight, you said, to the heart, which is a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah. It's really amazing. And the whole time I was there, I could feel conditioning. Like, I could picture, like, it's like a house party, and it's outside, and it's like, no, I want to come in there, and it's just, you know, there's no way in. It's like peeking through the window and, you know, coming around the corner, and it's like, no, really, you're not welcome. Like you're just not even invited. Like, you can't get in. You don't even know how. You don't even know how to get in at this party. You know what I mean? And it was just, it was so brilliant. And it was, you know, it was obviously, there was times when it could be uncomfortable because, you know, I'm so used to having conditioning buzzing in my ear about, well, that's what this means, and that's what that means, and this is how you're going to do this, and this is how you're going to do that. And it just wasn't even available. It couldn't. It was just completely dismantled, you know.
And I think a big part of that is what, you know, Sherry talks about, again, not giving anything away, but, you know, if you've been on retreats and you know what a Zen retreat is, and get ready, because it is nothing like that. It's just completely different from any other retreat you've ever experienced. The whole way that it's put together is just—it's different. It's just nothing that we've ever seen before.
Totally different. Totally different. Yeah. I mean, I think that anyone who thinks they know what's going to happen, you don't know. You really have no. Because I've been, you know, 10 years, and I do this, and no, I had no idea. And you know, that the thing of it is, what's so still incredibly brilliant about all of it is that, of course, it would be that way. Like, of course, if it was going to be something that was really going to go to the heart and completely bypass, you know, all that junk, of course it would be set up the way that it was set up. Like, it's just, because anything else is exactly what we'll hear about, you know, from Sherry, about duality and, you know, getting caught up in that, well, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. And you know, it's exactly that. This retreat is exactly, you know, outside of that whole conversation. That conversation can't even happen because it's not going to happen on that level, you know. So, yeah. I want to go again.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, there were a couple people who came to the retreat twice last season in its very first year, and I'm sure excited myself to do it again because there's just no way a person could take all of it in the first go. I mean, it's definitely one we'll have to repeat. So, yeah.
So, and you know, I definitely, like I said before, I do feel strongly enough to reiterate that the fact that you walk away with, or I walked away with, you know, all these really practical tools that really do get used in the moment when something is happening. It's a strategy. You know, as I work with children and we're always teaching them strategies to help them understand something or help them experience something. And it really is that, you know, it's just this kind of shortcut almost to get present. And there's all these different ones. And depending on the situation, that's the one that I'm going to use. And I do it so habitually now because it happens so naturally, because the ones that we learned make so much sense and are so easy to do wherever I am. And even if I'm in a meeting with other people,
yeah,
I can actually sit there and do one, you know, and it's just like, I don't know. I know at the end of every retreat, there would always kind of be this part where people would say, oh my gosh, but how am I going to hold on to this when I go back out into the quote unquote real world, you know? And it just seems like, you know, this retreat really, really covers that. You know, it's okay, here's how you're going to do it, and here's how you're going to do it every minute while you're here and when you leave and, you know, when you come back.
Yeah, so it's not just 7 extraordinary days out of your life. You're actually given a whole way of bringing it into your entire life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it feels like the beginning. I mean, it might sound a bit corny, but it did. It really felt like the beginning of, in some ways, in the beginning of my spiritual practice, even though, I mean, it's not, but in many ways it did. And it really felt like the beginning of my ownership of my spiritual practice. You know, it almost feels like its own precept ceremony or something, because it felt like this was my growing up. You know, this was my graduation almost. This was me taking responsibility for, you know, my practice, really, and who I want to be and how I'm going to be. But, you know, in a liberating way, not in a like, oh my gosh, this is a huge responsibility. It was almost like, yes, of course I want that. You know, this is what I want. You know, I want this freedom. I want this experience.
Yeah.
I want life.
Yeah.
I want this beautiful life that I can have, you know. So,
yes, graduating is such a great image of it. You know, the excitement, the possibility that comes with that.
Yeah, yeah, commencement, as they say. You know, it is. Yeah.
The beginning.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, much, much, much gratitude for being with us this afternoon to speak about your experience.
Oh, sure. It was my pleasure, and I hope people go, because they really should.
I could not agree more.
I know there's no should, but, you know, they really should.
If there were a should, it would be that you should go to the What You Practice
retreat. There you go. All right, thank you, Jen. Thanks so much.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
That's some retreat, huh?
Oh, my gosh. I'm sitting here grinning ear to ear, and I'm right there. So it's going to start on the 21st of April, and I can't wait. For that retreat to start. So I'm right there with Jen and Lisa. I want to do it again.
Yes. It was great.
That was very, it was a great retreat, and that was a really fun conversation. I do think that they managed to capture the excitement.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yes, very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I have some announcements here.
Okay.
As we just heard, there are 2. What You Practice is What You Have retreats open for registration. The first one's in April, end of April, and then another one in June. And then coming up in May, there are two There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats. And then in April 7th, there'll be a guidance day for monthly donors. And all of this info is on the website at schedule.livingcompassion.org. Folks can read more and sign up on that page. All good.
All good. I tell you, with those advertisements, truly, I want to go. I'm going to go sign up. You know, it's that, because I was looking at it, I was thinking, well, you know, there's nothing wrong with you and what you practice, and you know, but what about those people who have already done these retreats? You know, what's there for them? And I do know that we have some other ones coming up, but it was just such a feeling of, yeah, well, do it again, because, you know, I'm different and life is different and everything is turned around and around and around, and people have rudely, I would say, Michael, but, you know, if I were going to say such a thing, accused me of just saying the same thing over and over and over. And of course I do, because there's only a very small amount to say. You know, yeah. This is why we suffer. This is how we suffer. This is how not to suffer. Do this and you don't have to suffer. It's really straightforward. And, of course, people have been saying it for the last 2,500 years. And so there we are. So this kind of Western, I think, idea that we have to have a new experience. Oh, well, I already did that. You know, it's so silly because, of course, what we're learning to do in awareness practice is go deeper, not to, you know, have more and more experiences on a horizontal level. We want to go vertical. And there's nothing like having the sort of familiarity can allow us to relax into a deeper experience. So there's a way in which doing the same retreat over and over every year would be a really powerful tool, because it would be taking it to deeper and deeper places in practice, instead of the tendency to want to do something new and then essentially seeing the same thing from a whole lot of different angles that may be entertaining but don't necessarily give us any new information to work with.
Yes. And I'm so grateful that you do say the same thing over and over, because it becomes obvious that there's not something to learn. It's not an intellectual pursuit. It's a matter of being here and, as you said, looking more deeply at what is going on.
Yeah, that we're really practicing. We're not learning. We're not. I mean, there are certainly forms even of Buddhism where that's the idea. You know, you just keep learning and learning and learning and learning. But that's not what Zen is. Zen is really pretty darn simple and straightforward. People have noticed that it's a little challenging to manage, but that's not because we don't understand it. You know, I need to drop everything and be in this moment there. You know, there's that's it. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And I was going to say we have some announcements, but I just read those announcements. So I will go to the reminders, and that is for folks to please focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Gwen in Texas.
Hey, Gwen. It sounds like you're kind of at the bottom of a well in Texas. Are you on speakerphone by any chance?
I just took it off.
There you are.
I'm fine. The open air app is confusing. I didn't realize I was waiting. Last week I waited, and I was so nervous. And this week I've been just listening to the update and so calm, so my voice just didn't have a chance to get me.
That's good. Yeah, I was just so present to what I was doing that there was no attention left over to entertain those voices, and so they weren't there.
That's right.
Yeah, very good. What's going on?
I have been practicing the stop, drop, and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
When I catch myself thinking and thinking, I just stop, go wait, breathe, get here, here I am. Oh, yeah, this is what it's all about.
Yes, yes. Again, that's very much what we were just talking about with the retreats, isn't it? So, you know, then conditioned mind would want to have, you know, a more challenging technique to use, or a, you know, a more advanced tool or whatever it thought. You know, you're really good at that stop, drop, and breathe business. You should move on to Shikantaza or something. And and instead, all we need to do is moment by moment by moment practice stopping, dropping what conditioned mind is doing, and breathing and getting here.
And we need to hear it every day.
Every day. Mm-hmm. We do. Because
sometimes two or three times.
Yes. Yeah. Because our conditioning to forget is deep and wide.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to what you were just saying, that we feel like, oh, I know that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's such a powerful, tricky place, because, of course, the I who knows that is the problem that we're trying, the suffering that we're trying to drop, right? And so to have that arise and be able to say, well, wait a minute now, only ego wants to know, so that it can
mm-hmm.
not be present to what's here now. Wait, there isn't actually anything to know, because this moment has never existed. So I get it. Okay, I'll drop that and just breathe and get back here.
But I catch myself sometimes in that loop of, you know, recognizing that I'm not living. And that I'll go, oh, I stop and I drop and I breathe. And then there's that small part of me that goes, oh, you already knew that, you know.
Mm.
And it takes me off again if I'm not
yes.
real careful.
Yes, yes, exactly. and the you know, you've got to have a lot of sympathy for us, because here we come into spiritual practice truly clueless, right? And we're going up against a system that has so many plays and ploys and plots and plans, and we're just stumbling around trying to catch on to what the heck is going on, which is another argument for not understanding it. But instead,
mm-hmm.
getting just that little technique, you know, tie a twist tie around my finger, and moment by moment by moment, I just drop everything and come back to the breath.
And it's so simple and so incredibly complicated at the same time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But the thing is, are you in the current email class?
No, I'm not. I've taken up painting. I'm obsessed with painting.
Oh,
I am
that's
just
right.
So into the moment with, I mean, I wake up in the morning thinking about it, and I go to sleep at night planning what I'm going to do tomorrow. And I get in there and I start painting, and the hours just fly by. I'm just having a wonderful, wonderful time.
Oh,
and it's all about the process. People go, oh, that looks good. And I go, does it?
Really? Oh, how nice.
Oh, yeah, yes, it does.
Well, that's good. That's good. Because that is exactly the point that I was going to make, which is when we realize how good it feels to be in the present, to feel what it feels like for life to be living us, instead of giving our life force over to karmic conditioning and self-hate, practice becomes much, much easier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
You know, Sherry, we all come to this because we're miserable.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd be happily bouncing along in our conditioned lives thinking we're happy.
Yes.
Which I suppose a lot of people are happy there. And if their conditioning allows them to be happy there, I guess. I don't know, because I wasn't.
And I'm not a good person to ask either, because, of course, everybody I know got to the place where they weren't happy, and that's how they, you know, found me. But
mm-hmm.
And I suspect that there's much more struggle out there than than we know. We see a lot of evidence that there must be some severe suffering and struggling going on. But the thing that we can know is it takes us getting to that point of having suffered enough before we're willing to entertain something, a possibility other than what the voices have allowed us, which is a huge moment in everybody's life. When we get to that turning point and wake up in whatever way to there must be a better way or there must be something else, then we're on the path. We got our feet firmly on the path. Of course, the argument could be made that our feet are always on the path, but there's something about having a sense that they're on the path that can offer, a fair amount of comfort to us.
And knowing we're not alone.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then when we feel it, when we feel what it feels like, even for a split second, not to be in the clutches of karmic conditioning and self-hate, it's like, okay, I want that. I want to do that. And now the willingness. We find the willingness. So it's all a good thing.
And let the pain go and just experience the joy. And of course you're going to have pain too, but it's a different kind.
It is. Yeah. Yep. It is. It's a whole different world, isn't it?
Yeah. And sometimes we slip in. I slip in and out of it. You know, some days I have these days where I'm like so blissful, and then other days I'm like, okay, where is it?
Yes, but that's the difference, isn't it? You're asking, where is it?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just wandering around in darkness, feeling like there isn't any it. So that's huge. To know, I'm having a really bad day, or I've hit a bad patch here, but I know that there's an alternative. I know what's possible in life, and so I can see this that I'm going through right now in perspective. And that's just all the difference in the world.
It feels sometimes like getting caught in a whirlpool.
Yes.
And I have great empathy. I've listened to several callers that I cried along with them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know. I've been there, and I know how painful it is to feel just that ugh.
Yeah.
And I want to reach through the phone and give them a hug.
Right. And, of course, they're on the phone. So we know at a certain level that they're okay. Right? I mean, mm-hmm. We know everybody is okay, but it's much harder to remind ourselves of that when people seem completely lost and they don't seem to know that there's any alternative. So as soon as somebody has started taking those steps to wake up and to stop, drop, and breathe, there's a little, that sense of relief that, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good to hear from you. Happy painting.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Michael, for being there every week.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Take good care.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Glenn. You're listening to Open Air. We have another caller, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Janice from Texas.
Hey, Janice.
Hey.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
What's going on?
Sorry. I have to cough. Sorry about that. Well, I was calling in for my commitment, but there's something that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while. It's actually two things, but I think one's a subset of the other or related. But it's really process, but I'm going to give you some content for it. And this is kind of like an overall process that I see that that happens, and it's something needs to happen, in this case, the sale of a lake house. And so what I do is decide to update it and make it perfect and do everything that I possibly can. And I just, you know, no matter what the cost, like I'm obsessed with it. And you know, it's like someone hitting their head against a brick wall and doing it for something that's not really within my control. But I start out that I want to do it because I wanted to learn how to tile and I wanted to learn how to texture and do all, you know, all this stuff. And then through the process, EKC just turns it into work.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I used to do that when I in my job. And then I had great peace. The only time I ever had peace was when I went to the lake. So it was like the opposite. So I've turned the lake house into my work. Now that I don't have a job, I know it's kind of funny, actually. So I'm doing the opposite. Like it used to be, the only place I got peace was when I went to the lake, and I did this process during my career work, and then I don't do it at work, but now I do it at the lake house, which used to be my peace, and now it's just.
Now you have to escape to work to get any peace.
Exactly. Now, the good thing about, and I was doing the update for over like 7 months, and the good thing about it was I had a front row seat to kind of watch how it works. And during that whole time, I went in and out of, we'll say, the Lightroom. But I got to see, you know, and when I was working, I would listen to Open Air sometimes, and then I got to see how it talked me out of listening to Open Air, and I don't know.
And was there actually somebody who enjoyed doing the work that you were doing there?
Definitely.
Did you learn to tile and to do texturing and all of those kinds of things?
Yes, there's definitely someone that would like to be a carpenter or something or just be handy with all that stuff. And I would enjoy it. When I was present, I could really enjoy it, and it didn't suck all my energy away. And it was subtle ways, like if I was painting a room, I noticed that how it would turn it into work, EKC, it would start counting down the walls. You know, like instead of enjoying that I'm painting, it's like, okay, three more to go, you know, to just make it not so miserable, you know, and that's what was making it miserable. And I could see it sometimes and catch it while it was doing it, which is
right.
Good.
And so it sounds like what you're actually catching on to is that's just what it does. So you've identified several of the phases of,
mm-hmm.
of its campaign. So the first one is to get really wound up over something. And
mm-hmm.
I bet the lake house is not the first thing, right, that you've got.
No, and it builds into obsession, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so then it gets you obsessing. And then after you're hooked, so running parallel is the fact that you want to sell this place and you do really enjoy doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody has fun with it and wants to learn and all of that goes on. And all of that is going on all the time in life. So these two tracks are always running parallel, as far as I can tell. So there's just what the human being does and enjoys, and it's sort of it's just how your life unfolds in this case, because we're talking about your life. So it's just how your life unfolds. You know, you have these skills and talents, and you have these interests, and then different things arise in your life, and you pick that, you go with that, and then you do that, and then. Okay, so all of that's going on, and there's nothing, it's not a good, bad, or indifferent thing. It's just how your life is unfolding. And
mm-hmm.
then on the other track is egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, doing its campaign to get your life force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... You might just legitimately get really excited about doing something. Gwen was just talking about painting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to bed at night and can't wait to get up in the morning to. She's not painting walls though. That could be a difference. I don't. Maybe not. And so then there's the excitement about whatever is coming up. You know, it's time to plant the garden, or you're gonna go on a road trip, or you're going to learn to horseback ride, or you're going to redo the lake house. And so there's great excitement, probably a lot of young people who get really enthusiastic, people who just love to do stuff, like to participate, like to be busy, like to be involved. It's a big game, it's party, it's playing, right? But then you can watch how karmic conditioning turns that whole process that if without it would just mean you going along enjoying your life. But
mm-hmm.
you enjoying your life doesn't allow karmic conditioning to have its imaginary life. So it's going to be running right along parallel, doing everything that it can to grab your attention and to suck the life force out of you.
Mhm. Yeah, what came to me when you were talking was, I think it was just yesterday, I had this awareness that I get interested in a lot of things and excited about a lot of things, and then I can just go into confusion, you know, just like, oh geez, what should I do? And EKC just turns it into work. But I had this awareness come up, from the at-home retreat, one of the things to do when you're identified that someone said was to say, well, what would this look like from center? And it immediately came to me that if I was at center, it would look like a whole lot of energy and no one there managing it at center.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And in that place, of course, life would give you the next thing to do. Right? So there wouldn't be the confusion. The that whole agitation thing is what that's what it feels like when conditioning is siphoning off your energy. So there you are, you know, you're generating a lot of energy, and then there's that, oh God, nobody's saying it, but there's that sense that it's unpleasant. You know, this is not going well, and you can feel the energy being drained out of you.
Yeah, or literally I would work from, you know, like 8 in the morning until midnight or something, like literally sucking all my energy. I mean, just no one there. I wasn't present to manage, you know,
nobody was
my
there
time.
Taking
well,
care of the person.
To take care of the person, yes, exactly.
So it's just have all that energy, build all that energy up, and then just drain it out of you, and then build it back up again and drain it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And if anybody else who's listening in, you know, I bet everybody can watch that same process going on. And it's just to see what's happening on the two parallel tracks. One is a person just living life, and the other is everything karmic conditioning, self-hate is doing to grab that attention and life force.
Mm-hmm. So what concerns me is when I'm looking at trying to do something with my what to do with my life that supports me in practice and I can make money at, and you know, that lights me up and I can make money at it. But I don't know, that it's just that process, and the one little subset of that process is before I start anything, I have to be doubly certified, or, you know, like everything has to be aligned perfectly. And I know that's EKC, but I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things. One, I think you are doing the thing that there is to do about that, which is you're watching the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I know very well that lit up about 1,000 things at the same time. But in my experience, whatever it is that there is for you to do will rise to the top, and that'll be the thing to do. So that's one thing. So, you know, there is, as you have more of a growing sense of life living you, then you'll see more subtle layers of how you get excited about something, and then it gets taken, karmic conditioning tries to pull it into that obsession, the conversation. But if you don't go with the conversation and you just stay with life, you know, that feeling of being animated, then if there's something there for you, if that's a direction that you're going to go in your life, then it'll stay. You'll stay with that sense of this is what I want to do, or this it's time to do that, or this would be the next. And if not, you'll watch the various things come up for you to look at, and karmic conditioning will be there with its great big hook, and you wait a couple of days and it sort of passes and you realize, oh, no, that's not it. So that's one piece of it. The other piece of it that I would encourage you to play with is never, now you do have to take care of the human, okay, that's very important, but never stay on past the enthusiasm. Okay, so, yeah, so you're doing something and when it stops being fun, stop doing it.
Even if the mortar's still wet?
Even if the mortar is still wet.
Yep. I'm kind of just kidding, but yeah.
No, I know you are and not. Yes, no matter what, because that fear of consequences is how vast amounts of suffering happen to nice people. And so, you know, if the mortar dries, then you'll find out how to remove the mortar, but not to fall for. So you have to keep doing that because if you don't, then awful things will happen. And I would just across the board encourage everybody in the world never to do anything under the threat of something awful will happen if you don't. Because there is no mystery about what's going on there. Life never gives us that kind of information. Ever. All right.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Fun to see, huh?
And I've signed up for the What You Practice Is What You Have retreat, so I'm excited.
Oh, good. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fun.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Janice from Canada.
Well, hello there.
Hi. I am so excited because I'm coming to the monastery for Visiting Monks program. And I'm leaving Friday so that I can get to San Francisco and have plenty of time to hook up with the ride that will take me across.
Yes. Well, good.
It's so good. And so I've been since December, when I heard about the program, I just thought, oh, absolutely, that is what I want to do. That's how I want to start my birthday. I'm turning 30 at the end of the, or sorry, half of that. I'll double that. I'm turning 60 at the end of April. So I just have a year of dedicated practice all lined up, and this is, to me, is just like the grand opening for this 60th year.
Wonderful. That's a lovely tradition to be following. You know, in the much of the world, that's how people do it. You know, you spend the first part of your life sort of devoted to society, and that you're working and participating in society and perhaps raising a family and that sort of thing. And then you get to a certain age and it's time for you to focus inward and get ready for the next period of your life. That's very good.
Mm-hmm. And hearing about, the retreat that I loved last year so much is going to be offered the last week of April. So I will actually have a second chance to do that.
Uh-huh, the What You Practice.
Oh, yeah, that was just phenomenal.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Return to the scene of the crime.
Exactly, yeah. And I just noticed that I cannot contain my enthusiasm about it. And so they don't know I'm turning 60 or anything, or just asking me, well, have I got any plans for this year? And it just bubbles out. And, folks that don't have practice are asking about practice. And people seem to be just inspired. And I heard a couple of people that I didn't even know well just sort of look at me and say, oh, it makes me want to cry. I'm so amazed at the responses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine that people look at you and think, "Wow, well, what is it that she is so lit up about? I would like to have some of that lit up for my own life."
Mm. And I have to, Well, I just adore it. I just do. And it's so sustained how long I'm feeling like that. And it started, really started quite a while ago. And then I saw the application come out in January. And then I got the acceptance in February. And, I'm kind of, planning around. I've got some things. I've been there before. So I've got a picture of the landscape and what how little I really need to take with me and what needs to be done before I go.
Mm-hmm. Exciting.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
And I sort of shift it from that 3-month self-retreat all winter long at the top of the mountain in the snow. And I've had 3 weeks to get ready for this. But what I want to say is it's the process. Somebody said to me, oh, do you have a few things to do before you go? Have you started getting ready? And I said, I'm already on retreat. And I really am. I already am because I have, my uncle is 98 and a half. He might not be alive when I come back. He's in a care facility. And an aunt that has just been, she's having treatment for lung cancer. So I'm just, everybody is precious. I'm leaving, and they may or may not be here. My dog's 15, but then they may be here, and everything is precious. The plum blossoms that are opening up, and when I go away, I know my husband has some medical issues, and there's no communication. If something happened, I had to come home if it was communicated through the monastery. I said to him, please don't hesitate to call because you think you're ruining my one chance in this life. I said, even the commitment that I'm going and I'm doing this is you know, it's all enough, because life will come along and do whatever it does, and I'm not caught in the anxiety about it. What will happen, and I'm just going to be present for it.
There's tremendous comfort and ease and relaxation in that, isn't there? Like,
there is.
In a way, it's like being a child, in that sense of, you know, children don't expect to have control or be powerful or be in charge or make decisions. You know, they really do have to just kind of go along. Or your dog, you know. Again,
right.
To be one of those folks who doesn't have to look to conditioned mind to have control of life experience. You know, that life is in charge of their life experience, and it'll be whatever it is. And the level of, again, comfort and ease and relaxation and enjoyment that can come with that is powerful.
It is powerful. Yeah. And today was it was fascinating because the voice is just completely ramped up today about I won't be able to get everything done. And I've noticed that when I actually came home from the mountain, I already looked at the whole 3 weeks and thought, you know, I won't get everything done. But I will do one thing one after other and see how it goes. And I had just been sort of saying, it's amazing what I've got done, because other things have dropped in. Friend's daughter was killed in an accident, and there were, you know, some very serious things. But I could drop whatever I thought I had to get done, and I was present for the other things that were intervening that needed to be taken care of. So it was fascinating that today, suddenly it was, the voices were up there, and there was all sorts of, I could feel body sensations with a high energy swirling around, and I realized, like, what really needs to get done is I need to just hook up the dog and take him on the leash and go down to the village and pick up the coupons for the hotel tickets, because that would just get me out of the house, and I didn't have to do more. I didn't have to do more than that. And
life
I felt
leads.
Like 100% better just stepping outside.
Yes.
Because it was catching me.
Stepping outside the artificial world of have to and should that karmic conditioning is always trying to build for us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it'll be grand to see you on April 1st.
Yep. It'll be wonderful.
Okay. Good.
March 31st.
March 31st. Okay.
Yep.
We're gonna jump on April.
Okay.
All right. Good. Thanks.
Bye, Sherry.
Talk to you soon.
You bet.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller.
Excellent.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Mary Jane in San Francisco.
Who is this?
Mary Jane in San Francisco.
Hey, Mary Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I'm glad I called just to keep a commitment to myself, and because I was kind of getting this, oh, you could call next week, and I was kind of feeling in, you know, and you know you're in it a bit, and it's starting to become a little believable, and I thought, let me call.
You got one foot in, and then you notice the other foot is in, and it's kind of rising toward the ankles. It's time to step out.
Yeah, and actually what really helped me was when you reminded me of, like, its purpose. I think I was, you know, I have all these different little strategies, but just kind of be reminded its purpose is to take my energy.
Yes.
So.
That's it. You know, if people could get that, what a different world it would be. You know, it's not about you being a good person or the right person or being perfect or, avoiding mistakes or being who you should be or, It's not about any of the stories that people believe and give their lives over to. It's just about getting the energy.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can cut through all the stories. Of course, people can't because the stories are tailor-made for each individual. But if a person can see that, you know, it's somebody trying to get your money, and they might offer you the whole range of things that you could do that would transfer your money to them. Okay, but that range of things, that's all just a smokescreen, because the only thing that matters is they get your money.
Yeah, and I'm definitely seeing, you know, one of its probably one way it really tries to do this is it just happened right now. So I'll say something, or I'll be thinking about something, and I'll be planning to do that, and then it'll come up with a little alternative right after. It's like it bifurcates my thinking.
Yes. Yes. In fact, I just had a conversation with somebody recently where I said the thing that does not ever work for me is when there is, so we have a plan, you know, you and I have a plan.
Mm.
We're going to meet at 6 and we're going to go have dinner at such and such a place. And I get there and you say, you know, I've been thinking, there's this new place down the, because again, it's, and people can just check that out, just watch. But that is such a huge opening that karmic conditioning makes in order to distract and redirect the attention, as you say, from where you were going into this area where it's not clear. Now I have to think about this thing if you fall for it, you realize that you've just stepped on that, the old banana peel to hell. Now, of course, conditioning would like to frame it as spontaneous, being in the moment, just, you know, being present to whatever, but it's never that. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. I probably see it more in my everyday decisions. I mean, that's a very concrete situation. Yes, I do see that. That doesn't often, if I shift gears in that case, sometimes it doesn't cause as much. My energy doesn't go as much as if I'm, you know, one of the most successful ways is if I'm, you know, working on a project, trying to move a project forward, and then suddenly there's another possibility and another possibility, and I get paralyzed in not really knowing how to proceed.
Yes.
And then it kind of beats you up for you're not, you know, you don't have the capability to move this forward.
Right. Well, first of all, it there's the distraction, right? So now you have to consider all of these other things, and there's always urgency, right?
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good clue.
That's a good clue. So there's urgency, and now there are all of these things, and now you've got to, here's the big line, figure it out. And
yeah.
By that point, you're just firmly placed in conditioned mind, and it's gotcha. And it's just never, it's never going to go well.
I guess I'll be open to, okay, if I don't necessarily want to discard these possibilities that have arisen, some of which seem viable, but maybe listening into what does seem like the next step, if there was, especially if there's no urgency about it, what
That's right.
feels
That's the first thing to shake is the urgency, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we go back with my restaurant, so you and I are gonna meet at this place and we're gonna walk down to the restaurant that's down on that, and we get there and it's closed.
Mm.
Now is the possibility for life to start dropping in possibilities. Right? So if we just both stood there and breathe, something would occur. Yeah?
Mm.
So there you are in your projects, and these other possibilities arise. Watching how they arise, of course, can be very illuminating. Where did they come from? Did they come with a sense of urgency, or was there just that feeling of it just kind of drops in? Often when you're there and it just drops in, it's a, oh, of course, oh.
And there's a good feeling about it, like right. Oh, wow, like there's a, rather than a, oh, no, this is another thing I could be doing.
That's right, yeah. So there are big clues in our either response or reaction to what happens. And then, of course, if there's a conversation about, well, you need to, what if this, what is going to happen to that, and you better, you know, then we know where we are.
Mm, okay. Well, I want to give other people time to call, because I know I really appreciate being able to get on. So.
Right. Well, it would be fun to apply those things, and then you can
let
me know.
Yeah, I will. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. You're listening to Open Air. Sherry, we have another caller here.
Hey.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Goodness gracious.
Next caller, are you there?
We have somebody there, but I think they're underwater.
Sounds like it. Maybe it's the rain.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is George.
Well, hello, George.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I was laughing or smiling when you were saying how people say you say the same things over and over and over again. And, of course, you do, because there's not that much to say, because it is the same thing over and over again. But it's like that, you know, walking in the mist analogy of, you know, it takes a long time to sink into the skin and then into the bones.
Yep.
But but when it does, it starts to radiate out, you know, it starts to provide its own energy, so to speak, I guess.
Yes.
And and I've been experiencing that. That has been my experience, you know, has just continually moving in that direction.
It's interesting too, George, because you've just introduced a third energy into our conversation, right? That when you settle into practice and have a sense that you can relax into life living you.
Yes.
That energy is not vulnerable to karmic conditioning in the same way an unconscious energy of just going along in life is vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It becomes more of just the experience that
yes.
you live in.
Yeah.
The ocean that you swim in, or.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. it's been years, but it's been so worth it.
Wait, isn't that the truth?
Oh. it just brings forth the gratitude and appreciation and such compassion for this human being. You know that.
And I would say admiration.
Admiration, yeah, yeah. Admiration, appreciation, unconditional loving acceptance, which is just so transformative. Whatever the content, you know, bringing that process to it is just transformative. Makes all the difference. Being in the light room.
Yeah.
This past winter, as all winters are, was somewhat difficult for me, but a lot less difficult than it's been in the past, because of bringing that unconditional love and acceptance to one of the things that really started to change rapidly for me is accepting how I felt.
Yes.
And not allowing self-hate or conditioning to condemn me for it, or to judge me for it, or to put me down about it. That if I felt depressed, well, oh, that's interesting. What's going on here? And rather than allow self-hate to come in and not that it didn't, not that I didn't get identified from time to time, and not that I didn't spend, you know, plenty of time in the slammer, dark room, but not nearly as much as before. And noticing that it's just not such a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You know,
that's
a simple little phrase, but it changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, that's another thing that you have said over and over again, that, you know, feelings become, we give such importance to feelings as though they have all of this meaning, and really they're just sensations in the body, you know, attached to some emotion that we give a name to, and then that gives self-hate a chance to come in and say, oh, well, you shouldn't be having that emotion, and you know, and then it starts up the thoughts and the story and everything, and seeing how that. And just being there with just the sensation, you know, the butterflies in the stomach, or the tension in the solar plexus or whatever, and say, oh, tension in the solar plexus. Okay, well,
I can live through that.
Yeah, right. I've been there. I've had that before.
Yeah, and no story about it. I don't know why, but I just had this image when you were talking. You know, here we have, you know, our dog, our beloved dog, and, you know, there's something going on with the dog. And, you know, it just doesn't seem very sparky, or just doesn't, you know. And what we want to do is find out, well, what's going on? And is there anything we can do to help? Any way we can make this little friend of ours more comfortable or whatever? It's such an obvious response to somebody's having a hard time. There's something going on with somebody. And the love and care is just a natural response. But what we're trained to do with ourselves is turn to conditioned mind, to have that constant assessment and judgment. And then, boy, if that person is having the wrong experience, then kill him.
Right. There's something wrong with him.
Oh, yeah. No compassion for him.
Begin to feel that immediately.
Movement.
yeah.
That movement into, what can I help?
So, thank you so much for all that you folks do. All we do together, it's quite wonderful.
It is, isn't it?
It really, really is.
Yeah. And again, you know, people are conditioned to believe that there's something wrong with you if you don't get this in 15 or 20 minutes and turn your life around completely and then look like a cover on a magazine. But in fact, it's a one foot in front of the other, because what we're cleaning up is lifetimes of karmic residue.
Mm-hmm. And it's in the air.
It is in the air.
It's in the atmosphere. Yeah. I mean,
it's all
just,
yeah.
Yep.
So then when we get to that point of being able to look at our lives and go, wow, you know, I'm still me. And it's a fine me.
Really?
It's a perfectly fine me.
A life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, George. It makes me very, very happy.
Oh, thank you. Me too.
Right. Well, take care of yourself, huh?
You
stay
too.
Whoops. Are you there?
I muted him just a second too soon.
Oh,
there.
Well, he knows we love him anyway.
He's still there. There he is, George. Thank you, George.
Oh, you're welcome.
Good night.
Sherry, how did I get so lucky doing this?
I don't know. We must have done something right somewhere along the line, huh?
I don't know. I mean, just such clarity and wisdom and your experience and willingness and everybody showing up here at the same time every week. It's a miracle.
Yeah. You know, when George was saying, you know, that the karmic residue is in the air around us, and it is. It is around us. And the support and loving kindness of life is also always around us. And so just being able to see both of those and know which one we choose makes us very, very fortunate people.
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed. I'm very grateful.
Me too. Have we hit the end of our time?
We have.
Right. Well, then I'll see you next week.
We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Okay. Good night.